WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I'm actually sitting doing the show right now. I want to thank my pal David Knoll from MOI and Maryland Office Interiors, as well as my friend Dr. Steve Elliott fixing my back. I feel comfortable again, comfortable enough just to sit down and get back to the recon. Don Mahler joins us now. We have we're going to dust off the recon. It's been a couple of weeks. You were vacationing. I was crab cake touring. Then I was 30th anniversarying, and I'm selling my bike. I got the holidays, Thanksgiving. We had leftovers. You went to New York. How are you? What's going on? It's good to see you.
Everything's good, and I'm delighted that you've sold your condo. Congratulations once again, Jeff Mohler and Mohler & Carey Realtors, right? Got you. A new beginning for Nestor and Jeff. You know, let's start there before we even talk Ravens and Packers in the rearview mirror and playoff hopes that are dimming as we speak. You spent 30 years on the radio. You've been downtown what, Nestor? 18 years? How long have you been downtown?
18 years.
18 years.
We closed on Black Friday. 18. So it's 18 years in a month at this point. Yes. But we moved in January. Yes.
When you look back on those 18 years and city living and this spectacular view, anyone who follows you on any of the social media outlets, it didn't even exist when you moved in, right? But they know the beautiful sunrises and the beautiful sunsets and looking over the stadia.
There's one right behind me. This is literally
there's your view every day.
Exactly.
What are your favorite memories? This is Baltimore Positive. What are your favorite memories of 18 years living in the city?
The nights when the Ravens had big games, the Peyton Manning game they lost, that period of time. Back in the aughts where Joe Flacco came in, I think the parade was incredible. You know, the second parade was incredible. I said it was kind of frightening, and I'll stick to that because it was kind of frightening at that point.
Well, do you remember my conversation with Dick Cass? You know, and we're very fond of Dick, you know, president of the Ravens. And he said, boy, was your son right. Remember, we came to the second parade. It was Kevin Kamenetz and myself. We saw you and Jen up on the reviewing stand where it began.
I have pictures.
And,
that's right.
And you have pictures. And as I'm standing at the reviewing stand, my son had taken his boys and – or at least Jake, I guess. I'm trying to think. What was that, 12?
That was 13.
13. So he probably just took Jake. So my son is in – the upper deck, remember, because they were going to the stadium, and that's where the event was going to end up. And he said, Dad, they may have a problem. I said, what do you mean? And he said, Dad, it's total chaos. It's packed. And I can remember, and there's not a lot of direction as to where to go. And I can remember talking later to Dick. And Dick said, you know, they obviously were getting the same reports as they were fine. And they realized that they had totally underestimated the potential turnout, the number of people who would want to come and watch Ed Reed hoist the trophy and sing, you know, Bird in Paradise or whatever that crazy thing he was singing. And he, at that point, they were just holding on for dear life that no one would get hurt and knew they'd have to do it differently in the future. So it's interesting that you mentioned that, because that really is seared in everyone's memory.
Well, I mean, when I think of downtown over the last 19 years, I'd have to think about some really monumental things, right? And like, not all of them are good in regard to Freddie Gray and playing baseball games for no one and having tanks circling the street. But I also think about Celebration, which was amazing. And I think about the Lake City that's come on. For me, my wife and I walk into the farmer's market every Sunday, something we love to do. I think in recent times, the plague made us walk the city over the last two summers and Springs into Highland Town, discovering Patterson Park, discovering incredible little local restaurants, places like the Chaucer that I promote, and other places that I have promoted, like Verde and Fabeck and little places that sort of inspired the Crab Cake Tour, sort of a walking tour of Highland Town and Fells Point and Butcher's Hill and Canton and places that we walk living downtown, that if you live in Catonsville, you don't walk to Ellicott City. You don't walk to Woodlawn. You don't walk anywhere. You walk to Catonsville.
Well, you walk now. You walk to the village. And now with all the restaurants in the village, it's become very walkable, very bikeable.
But when you live in the city, I can walk to Station North, which right. I've done. I've walked to Penn Station. I walked to Camden Yards. I've walked to Federal Hill. I mean, I'm giving you
everything I think Nestor,
I do on foot, not like on an Uber or whatever. I mean, I haven't walked to Hamden, but I could. What I mean? It wouldn't be that far to walk to 25th Street or something from here at all.
The best example, a couple things come to mind with that. As we go down memory lane, talking about your 18 years in the city and your 30 on the radio, a couple of things for those of us who have been able to come on the journey, the thousands that have joined you. One of my takeaways, I said, obviously the sun sets, the sun rises, but also you all have sort of been the local Rick Steves for those of us who love the city, in that you and Jen have been the explorers. As you said, you've walked all over the city. I mean,
if your relative, your sister comes in from Jacksonville, Patty, who I've never met, but if she came in and you said, go downtown, get 5 days at a hotel downtown and do what Nestor tells you next summer, right?
Right.
Like, I would have, like, if I just took 5 days of my life and took your sister or my cousin or whomever around Baltimore and said, I'm going to give you 5 days, I'd say, do you have kids? What are you into? Do you like I had a friend, my friend Alyssa, who's been on the show from Wise Markets, right? She's one of their marketing people. She lives up Pennsylvania, up in the middle of Pennsylvania, up above Harrisburg, right? Doesn't get to the city much. Her husband and she were coming down for his birthday last weekend, right? So not the Packers weekend, the weekend that the Ravens were out of town, right? So ask what to do and where to go. And he loves history, loves building things. Spent the day at the B&O. Spent the day at the Maritime Museum. Like Museum of Industry, like just loved it. And they didn't do the Science Center. They didn't do the aquarium. You know what I mean? They didn't do Blacks and Wax, or they didn't do Reginald Lewis, but they probably didn't do half the things, but they did a couple of
things. They didn't do
things.
The BMA. I mean, you could, as you said.
You know
said,
what you... they loved? They loved the German garden that's down at the harbor now, you know, right. In the park. They did the German Christmas festival. And that's a thing that it's here for 4 weeks and people dig it and it's great and whatever, but you can't do it in June. You have to do something else.
Well,
and that was a 48-hour thing built for them. You know, he loves the chef, the Gordon Ramsay guy. So they went over to the casino and they did that, right? So they, Baltimore is New York to people from Pennsylvania.
Oh, no. You are its cheerleader. You are its guy. You know, our good friends you mentioned down there at the harbor, our good friends at May and Reichel, who are going to be joining us after the first of the year. They've got that incredible project that they've opened at Rash Field. I've been talking to Brian Dunn, who's a good friend of the show. Works.
They
at
did the skateboard park.
They did that whole park is May and Reichel.
Unfreaking believable.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was over at American Visionary Arts Museum and
right.
Shout out to Rebecca, who is departing. And I walked back at 10 o'clock at night, and I was with Damien O'Doherty coming back from a banner event, and kids are skating. It's well
amazing.
Lit. It is, I mean,
it, and that's our friend.
It looks like, and I would tell you this, I was in Sydney, Australia. If I think you remember me telling you this story, I ran into Bucky Lasik in Sydney at Bondi Beach. Bondi Beach is one of the most famous beaches in the world, right? They have a skateboard park on the beach. They have a bowl that Bucky was in practicing his run on Bondi Beach in Australia. And he's like known all over the world, right? He's there skateboarding
right.
In Australia. And I'm thinking in his own hometown, he doesn't. Now Bucky can come back here and see this thing. And my buddy Rudy Costello, who had sticky fingers, and people that were skate board people in the 80s would not believe what they built at the harbor. It's a beautiful thing. It really is.
No, and again, you know, we've had them on the show when they were planning to design and build that park, and they're going to come on shortly after the first of the year. So you've been our, you have truly been our guide. One of the things, and you know, Nestor, I don't think I knew this. It's so funny. Until 6 or 8 weeks ago, we were chatting about something. One of the testimonies to city living is the fact, and as I said, I didn't know this. You and Jen have one car. Well, you couldn't survive on one car in the burbs. It's not doable anymore. Now, some people may say it's not doable, but you guys survived. You were able, because of the walkability and the ability to get around to the city to everything you need, you and Jen survived with one car.
Well,
that's the quintessential
city
thing.
Right? Yeah, I mean, like during the plague, we didn't have to like get in it much. Right. I mean, if I go to Wise or I run out to the radio station to do something, or you know, I'm at a sponsor. I mean, the only way to get Pizza John's, other than, you know, delivering it or whatever, just go pick it up, right? If I'm going over to State Fair, over to Catonsville or whatever. But yeah, that's certainly something. For 18 years, I've never really considered that we're a one-car family, and we would be a two-car family if we had a two-car garage in White Marsh. Like,
no, it's a totally different way of life, and I think all of us, the thousands who have followed the journey, have really, really enjoyed it. At the same time that you're wrapping up that part of your life, you just celebrated 30 years. Has anyone asked you, Nestor, if you had one or two interviews, somebody said to you, we're going to create a vault of really special radio or podcast interviews.
I
that people
have one of those.
Have done. And we're going to say to you, to different hosts, you can pick two. Which two of your 30 years would you submit to that museum?
Two?
If you had to pick two out of 30 years. They're saying, we got hosts all over the United States.
I got 25,000 hours.
You only later. And you only get two.
Well, you always feel like the ones that you want are the ones you don't have. So I interviewed John Wooden on our mutual birthday, which is October the 14th. And I guess that was 2000. Yeah. You know, I was there 3 years.
Well, it had to be special for you because you're such a Wooden follower.
It was 2001. Yeah, it was 01. And he sort of famously, you could call him and he would come on the show, or you could knock on his door and he would invite you in. Like, literally, it's who John Wooden was. I don't have like the fondest recollection of what I said to him or what questions I asked at that point in my life. I guess I was 32 or 33. I think it was my 33rd birthday was that day. His 90-something birthday at that point. As far as admiration, you know what I mean? And I've interviewed in that space Tony Robbins, you know, all sorts of leadership people. But when I think of people that I've actually interviewed, I mean, I think
– You've interviewed the Speaker of the House?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't think about that. You know, I peed with Bill Clinton at Camden Yards on opening day 1990. Yeah, I did. It's true. 1994, 95. You know, I was in the White House with George Bush, right? So I was at the White House with you with Barack Obama. But those aren't like interviews. Like real sit down long form interview or short form. I mean, there's a whole different where Art Modell had me in and got feisty with me and that 3-hour series that I did with Art. I'm very proud of that. I'm proud of all the people I sat with who've left us, you know, that I went over to Alan Goldstein's house in Pikesville and sat with him while his wife made tea for us. And he told me about being with Ali up in Pennsylvania and, you know, just the stories and the people that I've collected. Most of it hasn't been like for public consumption as much. Something that I actually sat down and worked hard on that I never unearthed was the book on leadership and coaching that I worked hard on in 2007 and 2008. And I have Oh man, 20 or 30 hours of conversations with lots and lots of people. I had an opportunity to sit with Don Shula and I didn't. I had an opportunity to sit with Howard Schnellenberger and I didn't, but I did go sit with Frank Cush out in the stadium in Arizona. So some of the old time, the ones that mean the most to me are people who've left us who, I don't want to say their final words, but I laid it out for them that I was trying to define their story and their life in a conversation, however long that conversation is. My favorite interview in recent times, and I would tell anybody this, and there's a videotape that does exist of this, was with Mary Lou Retton. Mary Lou Retton sat down with me at the Super Bowl in Houston a couple of years ago, and that I did 12 minutes with her, and I just thought I was really good. She was fantastic. It was, you know, childhood hero, kind of like I had Maureen McCormick on from Marsha Brady. You know, when you have
Jennifer Garner on, right?
Dude, that was one of the worst.
Dude, and I love Jennifer Garner.
That was a nightmare interview.
I remember, and I love her.
Yeah, I mean, like,
what's in your wallet, you know?
Actors and actresses on. I wish I, you know, that New York Super Bowl was great because Jesse Jackson sat down and Geraldo Rivera sat down and Chelsea Handler sat down. We had a wild array of guests, but I mean, Adam Sandler's been on the show, Chris Rock's been on the show, you know, Snoop's been on the show. You know, I go through all the national syndication days of all the interviews that I've done with people that I found recently, you know, Tommy Lasorda and Bobby Bethard. And
it's quite a library. It's a library that you should be very, very proud of. In that library, nationally or other, this will shift us a little bit to football. Did you ever interview either nationally or recently Urban Meyer?
Never. No.
You know, Nestor, I've come to the conclusion, now, I hate to judge people based on news clippings or what you read, but I've come to the conclusion that he may be one of the most insufferable human beings ever put on the planet. And again, I hate to do it because I've never met him, but there's nothing that I read that makes me think he's a good person.
Well, I mean, Don, we're coming from different schools of leadership, right? And I know you don't fancy yourself a leader. You are. You may fancy yourself a coach because you've coached. Your brother's done.
No. But being self-deprecating, yeah, I would say that I've served in a number of leadership roles.
You're a leader, but not. But leaders and coaches may be different. And certainly with sports, right? Like your brother working with young ladies in basketball and seeing the way Bobby Knight conducted himself and seeing the way Tony Dungy conducted himself, right? Or seeing the way Gary Williams coached versus the way Dean Smith coached, right? And you could say that across basketball, across school principals, across politicians or county executives or wherever it is. Everybody's got a style, right? Of the way they do it, right?
You don't even know this. I used Brian Billick, and the principals that I worked with will remember this. When Billick won was a 2001 Super Bowl, I used Billick and his beliefs and things he had written about and said as a leadership lesson for the principals in the Northeast area. And you'll remember this, Nestor. One of them was prepare, prepare, prepare. And one of the examples that I used in that was, if you recall, back in, because you were there in that 2001 Super Bowl, when the Giant fans and everyone arrived in town, there was not a billboard available that had anything Giants. Everything on every billboard was Baltimore Ravens, because Brian Billick had anticipated months before that we might be there and we want to make it feel like Ravens Nation. Now, that's a small thing.
Actually, it was Bob Loeffler. So I want to give that credit to
Will. Okay, there you go.
Bob Loeffler was involved in that.
I mean, just a brilliant idea to turn. Where was that Super Bowl, Nestor?
Tampa.
Tampa. So turn Tampa into Ravens Nation. And that was just a small example. But, you know, Billick's ability to take command. So I think there are a lot of takeaways from leadership in coaching to leadership in other positions. You mentioned my brother, and folks who listen to the show or follow high school basketball, is, you know, one of the elite Hall of Fame high school basketball coaches in the history of this state. I mean, his name is mentioned in the same breath as the Sugar Canes and the Jerry Savages and the Ray Mullises and the Gene Niederlions. You go down the list, the Jerry Phippses, the great coaches in basketball in the modern era in the state of Maryland. Mike Mulward's there, and I think there are a lot of leadership lessons. I watched
Does he coach like Bobby Knight? I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, well, that's what I'm saying with this.
Although he's quite animate. He's somewhere between, he also doesn't coach like Mother Teresa. You know,
therein lies John Harbaugh, right?
Right.
Who's not like his father, not like his brother, but probably more like his brother than most people realize he is.
Correct.
But there is this, I mean, let's turn it to politics, right? I mean, Urban Meyer in Ohio State, Jim Jordan, right, is like considered a coach there. I don't know what that is, but that's not leadership to me. But when I see Urban Meyer, I equate it more on the ball coach side of Bobby Knight, more on the Harbaugh, Belichick, tough guy side than the touchy-feely new age coaching of Pete Carroll or Tony Dungy or, you know, I don't know. Go through the list of who these people are. But Urban Meyer is coaching more like Frank Cush coached. And yeah, I'll never forget this. You asked me about old interviews. When I sat with Frank Cush, you can go watch this because it's up on YouTube. So go literally. I asked him what the most important thing in coaching, and this is an 80-some-odd-year-old man at the time, right? He said, they got to fear you. They got to fear you. And I'm like, oh, wow. I bet Mike Moeller didn't coach like that. You know, like,
you know,
I
the
bet
way
in 2021, you can't do that. Urban Meyer, that's all he knew. That's the way it works for playing time and scholarship and all that. And it doesn't work that way in the real world. Some way some of your principal skills didn't work the same way as a county executive, right?
Well, the way I always tried to articulate it to principals and in teaching, you know, I was very fortunate. I got to teach doctoral students all over the United States for Nova Southeastern University. So I had a great experience. I went all over the United States teaching educational leadership to students in a doctoral education program. And one of the examples, and I can think of so many faces that pop up when I start to talk about this characteristic. One of the things, and it goes to your Cush question, that I used to say to folks, if you want to really find out who's effective as a leader in your building, you've really hit the jackpot if you say to students, if you say to students, who, if you have a problem, do you want to go talk to about it because you think they'll care? And if that student would say, Mr. Moeller, that's a good thing. But then if you can go to the teachers and say, if you've got a student who's really acting like a knucklehead and you want to make sure somebody, you know, talk sense into them and gets their attention, which administrator do you want to deal with them? Because you know they're not going to take any baloney. If they also say, Mr. Moeller, then you've hit the trifecta, because you've got the kids saying, this guy cares about me, and the teacher saying he cares about him, but he's also going to hold them to a certain standard of behavior because he knows they're better than they've acted in a certain incident. That's the sweet spot.
Talked about that with Jimmy Thomas 2 weeks ago.
James, I thought about it vividly. He was in my office as James reminded people. I said, it did sound like him. He said, yeah, you'd always say to me, James, we can't do that here. I mean, and that sounds like one of my, we don't do that here. And it's a sweet spot. And I had encountered so many great
Urban
principles.
Meyer never had anybody say to him, "We don't do that here."
No, and I just don't think. I think there. I mean, again, I feel bad because I've never met the man, but I don't get a sense that there's a soul and good. You know, whether it's servant leadership or soulful leadership, whatever term you want to put on it, leaders at their core have to care, and they have to make sure that the people working with them care and share the vision. It's a cliche, but we all have to row in the same direction. It does not mean that you're not occasionally tough on the people who work for you, but you've got to have a shared vision and you have to care about the same things. I think that's true in coaching. I think it's true in teaching. And I think it's true in any kind of, I think the best elected leaders also do the same thing. So that's
how
did
they get
it
so wrong? It's one thing to get a first round quarterback who's 21 years old who can't do it. But Urban right. Meyer, everyone who knew the guy,
I don't
everyone
know.
Around
it,
great thought
question.
It really speaks to Shad Khan not being a very good administrator. And right. I'm now putting the Jacksonville Jaguars in that conversation with the Browns right. and the rest of the ineptitude, which is, yeah, you're rich and you might be smart at that. I mean, I'm smart at radio, but I wouldn't be a very good school principal, right?
Well,
I mean, so it's a different skill set.
Recently, you know, we suffered through a painful loss. I mean, it was a tough loss, you know, 31-30. We lose to the Packers. We blow another 2-point conversion, which we're not very good at. I mean, unfortunately, that's one of the reasons why I would have kicked. But there's no right answer there. Go for two or kick. Both answers are fine. And experts can line up on either side of the ball. But as you posted shortly after the game on your Twitter feed, the inaneness, and this gets to your Jacksonville point, of people saying, fire Harbaugh. Now, wait a minute. Let me see. The guy's record is incredible. He creates an incredible culture of winning at the castle. He just went into a game with guys who were literally working at Pizza Hut a couple of days before and comes within a whisker of beating a team that most folks think are going to be in the Super Bowl. And people literally put on your Twitter feed, we need to fire this guy. I mean, and that's the way, Nestor, I think bad organizations, that's the way they run. And I'm going to take you all the way back. You're talking about your 30 years. Purple Rain 1, Purple Rain 2 remain what I think are the ultimate guide to the history of the Baltimore Ravens. So, folks, if you haven't read Purple Rain 1, Purple Rain 2, you need to read them both because you get a whole sense
of the
organization.
Online, so you can click it, though.
They're fabulous, fabulous books. And in that first book, you talked about a culture that I think is not rocket science, but obviously many organizations don't abide by. And that was, you tried to describe the organizational structure. And it, you know, it started with Art, it continued with Steve, it's with Ozzie, it was with Brian.
Well, it was actually written
John.
By David, believe it or not. To hire Brian, that was David's playbook. It was David's script to say, this is what the leader of the Ravens will do. And he was clearly different than what the leader of another organization would need to do, because he was taking over a 4-12 team, needed to be the unquestioned leader. And the one thing that David would always say about Brian is Brian was a leader of men.
Right. And everyone in the organization knew their role. It's interesting that we drifted into leadership. That's why we do get a kick out of the recon. We get all over the place. One of the skills that some people have, many don't, that's so important in being part of a team. I imagine it's true in a locker room. It's certainly true in a corporate boardroom. It's certainly true in a government cabinet meeting, is the freedom. And every one of my bosses that I worked for, Jim Smith, true, I'm going to take the education piece out now. I'll focus on the government piece. Jim Smith, Kevin Kamenetz, they all wanted lively discussions in that room. And I sense that the Ravens, this is what happens when they get ready to make personnel decisions. What happened? Let's get everybody in the room. Let's get Dick. And at the time, Kevin Byrne. And let's get Brian or John, Ozzie, Eric. Let's get everybody in the room. And let's all have our opinion. But at the end of the day, when we're making draft decisions, it's going to be Ozzie. But at the end of the day, it's going to be Eric. And it has to be that way in any organization. And the key is whether the people are, and listen, I was on some cabinets with some really diverse opinions. And, you know, people are probably laughing. They anybody that knows me, know I can get quite animated and fairly worked up if I believe strongly in a point of view. But I also think that at the end of the day, if Jim or Kevin said, okay, I've heard everybody, that's enough, I've made a decision, and both of them on occasion would have to look at me and say, Don, it's over. And I would say, and at that point, I'm smart enough to, okay, I fought the battle on this one. I didn't win. I've won other ones. But then we all lock arms and we go out together. It seems to me that's what effective organizations do in sport, in the corporate world, or in the government world.
But that involves trust and it involves a very complex, you know, series of events that Urban Meyer, everyone hated him there. Everyone.
Correct.
And that's why I don't know. Paid guy. That's the thing. When you fly in and you're the guy making all the money and you've bypassed everyone and you're going to change everything, you got to be vested. You can't be bumping and grinding on broads at midnight when the team's on the flight home. Like, that's insane. Like, the fact that he survived 8 weeks later is just about him having lawyers to get this money.
I would have fired him.
And the fact that he would ever do that when he sat with you last year and told you he was running your football team is shame on him. I mean,
I would have fired him
for buying him. You know,
I would have fired him that morning. And, you know, here's the downside of that kind of an organization. We're through 1 year of the Trevor Lawrence regime. And I have no idea. And I've watched him like a lot of other people. I have Red Zone, so I've seen a fair amount of Trevor Lawrence. I have no idea if Trevor Lawrence is a franchise NFL quarterback, because I don't think God could quarterback that team in that chaos.
Well, I mean, it becomes attractive because they're going to have another high pick and they have him. And if you believed in him at Clemson, and I would think, you know, 25 general managers believed in him, maybe not more than their guy, but I would think John Harbaugh would look at Trevor Lawrence and say, I could win some football games with him. You know what I mean?
I would think
anybody would look at that and say, you could win with him.
Which gets us to this question. And I know we're coming up on the end of the recon. I guess this may be our last recon of 2021, given the holidays coming up.
Sing Auld Lang Syne.
You moving and the whole thing. So given that, talk a little bit, and let's start with, we have a small sample size of Tyler Huntley. Have you seen enough of Tyler Huntley to suggest that on some level out in the castle, they may be scratching their heads and saying, do we spend $40 million a year on Lamar, or do we use that money? We have so many holes to build the team otherwise and try to go. You think they're still all in on Lamar?
I don't know. We're going to find out, aren't we? I mean,
it's a great question, though, right?
Well, I mean, being all in on Lamar means you're all in on the system. And I'll be honest with you. I don't know if they can win a Super Bowl like this. I don't know if it's sustainable. I don't think it's long term that Lamar's going to be 29 and running around like this, or
well, here's,
that it's
here's
the end
my
of the
take.
Year and he's already slowed down because he gets hit too much. I mean,
well, that's my take.
I'll tell you what, if he doesn't come back and play and doesn't play well and like all that, I would look back and say him running the ball 21 times against Minnesota, he ain't been right since that happened. You know, I would look back and say that.
Listen, I'm not suggesting, and you know my affection for the organization from Dick all the way down. You know Eric better than I do. I'm obviously very fond of Dick. I think the world of John. I've seen him interact with my grandchildren and how I think he is a leader of men. I love that term you use. So I'm not suggesting that anyone would do what I'm about to suggest. But here's my take. With three games left in the season, this team, and I love this team will not win the Super Bowl. So I'm wondering if the team wouldn't be better served in the long term to see Huntley play one or two more games so that you could really then make an enlightened decision. Here's my concern, Nestor. I don't think there are, unless you're a Tom Brady.
I mean, I can stop you right here by saying you think they're not going to win the Super Bowl, so they're going to try out their backup quarterback.
They're not going to do
that. I assure you that you might as well call 105.7 with that.
Because
that's a non-starter. I mean,
They're not going to do that.
Well, I mean, I get nasty. Now, this is the bad phone call. Like, that's just that's not going to happen. So for me, like,
you can dismiss it, but long term, might that not be better for the organization? I prefaced it by saying,
I don't know long term if giving Lamar Jackson $250 million, thinking that at 31 he's going to be better than he is now. Like, right? I mean, like,
well, that's my point.
You got the new car out of him. Now he's a pre-owned car, but maybe he's a pre-owned car that you like the settings on better, or you like the growth, or you like the progress, or you like the intellect, or you like the price, which they won't like because he's going to be expensive. I don't know the negotiation with his mother, on and on and on and on.
But so, my concern is what I call the Russell Wilson example. I think there are not many examples, I said, other than a Brady or a Rodgers, perhaps a Mahomes, perhaps, although I'm not convinced that this is true about Mahomes, where you can spend that kind of money and continue. The quarterback is so great that it can cover up other holes. Because when you've spent that kind of money, you don't have the resources under the NFL structure.
Flacco would be, you know,
perfect example.
I mean, it all fell apart for him and the fan base when they refused to put players around him on the offense,
correct,
and then they drafted on defense. So
perfect example. Hey, listen, last point before we get out of here. We will have a lot to talk about in 2022, certainly not the least of which we will come back. We'll have some of our political friends on talking about that. Senator Joe Manchin showed his true colors recently when he went on Fox News and stabbed the president in the back. There's no other way to describe it. He, you know, Charlie Brown and the footballed him. He led Democrats on for months and then goes on Fox News and stabs the president in the back and says, "Build Back Better is done." Really, really putting the Biden presidency on life support, really pretty reprehensible behavior by the senator from West Virginia. We will have to see how it plays out.
Yeah, I got nothing other than, you know, Joe Manchin being a dirty politician and a bought-off politician, which is based on the Maserati, based on the yacht, based on the fact that he's from West Virginia, based on the fact that all of his wealth is built in coal. I mean, it really does speak to what's wrong with the country when this is what an elected official looks like there.
Well,
I've been very disappointed in, you know, like Hogan got COVID an hour before we taped this. So, I'm not going to pile on him, but very disappointed in we had 14 people shot here on Friday. And it feels like from Annapolis, they spiked the ball. I mean, it's so, until we get the country together, John Harbaugh could not function the Ravens this week if it was offense versus defense. Billick got fired over that with Rex Ryan 15 years ago, that when it's offense against defense and when there's cars driving around saying F Biden and when Trump's criminality is so brazen in regard to an insurrection that we're coming up on a one-year anniversary and nobody's been held accountable yet except for the guy that had the –
the shaman
painted. But
I sense that there is diminishing support among mainstream folks, all except the extremes, for the former president. I would direct everyone, Nestor, good friend of mine, we've had him on the show, Laszlo Boyd, now lives in Pennsylvania, has a wonderful blog. From a certain point of view, if people want to Google Laszlo Boyd from a certain point of view, certainly not a bomb thrower, one of the most thoughtful people that I've ever known, really an expert on many, many topics, has written his latest blog poses the question as to whether or not, not a civil war, but whether we truly have become so ungovernable that we need to look at dividing into two separate nations, those comprised primarily of the blue states and the red states, and let people have two separate countries. It's an incredible proposal.
It would be better than killing each other.
Well, and his point would be you could at least begin to govern in a way that people want. Listen, I always come back to Nestor. The founders did many, many things right. And God bless the founders. We all love the founding fathers. But every time I see the gridlock in the Senate, you've heard me say before that I was proud to be county executive in a county that had more people than West Virginia, Vermont, North Dakota, and Alaska. More people than those four states. And the next census will probably add South Dakota to the list, five states. And those four or five states.
I have to get two more residents.
They have two senators each. I mean, come on, we've got senators representing land. Every time I watch Yellowstone with Kevin Costner, which I love, I turn to my wife and say, think about it. That state has two United States senators and no people. With that, man, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, all that. Because good luck with the move, man, and we will see you in 2022.
Don Moeller, former Baltimore County executive, and my Kemosabe. Want to shout out Fadley's and our friends at Costas who are shipping crab cakes through the holiday.
I'm going to interrupt you. Yeah. I'm going to interrupt you while you're doing that. As soon as I'm done here, I'm jumping in the car and going down to Fadley's and buy some lobster tails and some shrimp. Man, we're going to be all. I'm heading down to see our friends Damie Hahn and Bill and Nancy Devine. I'm on a
crab cake
tour.
Delivery that I smell somewhere.
I'm on
maybe.
My way, man. I'm on my way.
You know what? I'm thinking about doing. Okay, that's a wise idea. I like that idea.
I'm heading over. And I was in our friend. I got to tell everybody. I won't mention the other supermarket. Don't want to pick on anyone. But I was in another supermarket over the weekend.
I needed sausage.
For, you know, we have certain breakfast menu for the kids on Christmas morning. Link sausage is on the menu. Believe it or not, the supermarket down the street, no sausage.
Got to go to Maiden Choice Lane.
I said to Linda, we're heading to Maiden Choice. All the sausage I wanted. Our friends at Wise Markets. So I'm telling you.
They had fruitcake there I almost bought the other day. So I'm thinking right about doing cap. Some fresh
it.
Wise fruitcake. Not the Claxton. I'm talking about the fresh stuff out of the oven.
There you go.
Yeah, one other thing. If you're eating that fruitcake, Royal Farms on Christmas Day, if you have the app, free coffee. Free coffee for all my friends at Royal Farms.
There you go.
And you don't even need to know Justin Tucker. You just need to know me. I know about the free
there
coffee.
There you go.
If you got the app. Don Moeller will be here as we get into 2022. We're going to be taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery back on the road as well. We're going to be starting things at Nacho Mama's in early January, but I have a full list. And by the way, I've got plenty of Purell to go around to for everybody, as well as my Maryland Lottery mask. I am Nestor. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Merry Christmas.
Stay safe. Be nice to each other and drink more eggnog. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.